6.
Perfect. Ron, you seem to get a little lost there between 1 and 2.
I was thinking, while I was peeing, I thought of a terrible invention.
I'm listening.
I used to be a truck driver too. I used to drive 18 wheelers. And I used to have to pee in a bottle. And
yeah,
I was thinking they should make a bottle you could piss in for podcasting, so you wouldn't have to get up.
I think,
you know what I mean? Like,
so I think what we do is we don't endorse a competing product. What we do is we pitch exclusive advertising contract for this show to medical urinary bottles.
Yes. That's perfect. That could be our first sponsor.
Yeah. I think that Wondery should have a catheter service. And if they do that, then the sky is the limit.
If they angle it towards podcasting too, like they call it the podcaster piss pal or something like that, right? That would be, that's, it rolls off the tongue, you know?
It does.
Yeah. The G Wizinator.
The G Wizinator.
Do you see this? Anybody see this? Yeah.
Have you seen this, Kevin?
Sharks. Yeah, exactly. Sharks. I come to you. So with the worst idea you've ever heard. It is completely not monetizable, and your security does not know that I'm here. I'm going to end up Frankensteining this and moving it back, because we forgot to do our theme, and so I will do that. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to the earlier episodes, but we have chosen not to license music or hire professional musicians or even amateur musicians. What we do instead is we do mouth horns of public domain. The saints go marching in. And so if you want to join us, you're free to. But we are going to do mouth horns for the saints go marching in on 3, 2, 1. Hey everyone, welcome to City Saint and Country Saint, episode 5. After week 4, a horrible, devastating loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that I no longer even remember the score of. And with me, as always, my friend in Florida Lee, L. Ron Mexico. How are you, Ron?
I'm doing bad. I'm down bad. I'm sad about everything.
It affects my mood as well. And with us this week is my longtime friend. Usually he is the one inviting me on his podcast. It's a pleasure to return the favor. Tampa Bay resident and semi-fan of the Buccaneers, Jeb Lund. How are you, Jeb?
Hey, Jeb.
You know, I wish I could say that I was amped up by the game, that I won, you know, technically. But it is Tampa. It's Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we're going to get into that. But otherwise, I'm doing fine. Thank you so much for having me. As you know, I like to pattern a lot of my life after the character of the Giggler from Death Wish 3. But
of course,
I don't want to do that when you guys are mournfully mouth-horning like a Bourbon Street funeral. Like, it just seems,
yes,
it seems a little dancing on the grave, especially as somebody who is not a Buccaneers diehard, but sort of like osmotically a fan, because I've had the zip code for long enough.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't even get better if we go to your real fandom. It's like you were born in the Bay Area, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so he's this 49ers fan, which for a Saints fan is like finding out that your school bully just moved in.
Yeah.
You know,
what's
I'm just fine. That hurts. Yeah. I'm just finding out now. It's like trauma.
So the only two times that, I've seen the Niners play in person 3 times. Once when they just annihilated the Glanville era Falcons, and that was in Fulton County Stadium.
Okay, that sounds fine.
But the other two times, once was at Candlestick, once was at the Superdome. They just trucked the Saints, and I'm sorry
about that. It took us apart.
They did get a Super Bowl in the year the first time I saw them, so it seems like, you know, what are you going to do about destiny, right?
Right.
That was like the 55-10 year too, you know?
Okay. Yeah. That was a pretty good team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is very hard to get mad at losing to a team that was just blowing out the opposition, but I was anyway. I was very mad.
Yeah. Oh. I feared the 49ers growing up. Like, I was terrified of them.
Yep. They have created a lot of trauma. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people won't even travel to Montana. So where did you watch this game?
I have access to NFL app plus thing. So I watched Red Zone. And one of the reasons why I knew the Bucks were up was I just never saw the game. Because after a point, Red Zone is like, nah.
You know, right. I was going to say, if you watch the game on Red Zone, then the Saints were DB Cooper.
Yes. Yeah. But then I watched it the next day because you get the full replay with the plus right, thingy. So I did it without halftime and all the breaks and went through it. And in a way, it was very similar to the Red Zone experience.
Yeah, because there was no one in the Red Zone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I can't even imagine having to watch this on replay in a method other than Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, it's torture. It's torture. I don't want to think about this game again. I don't want to. Yeah, this was bad. I think while I was watching it, I started like kind of disassociating from football. Like, I was like, this game, they should cancel football. Like, people are getting hurt. Like, why are we doing this? Yeah,
it's bad. My son got to experience for the first time me completely. Like losing my shit, which was very funny to me, because I was going insane because Kamara had 13 catches. Does anyone want to guess how many receiving yards he had on 13 catches?
I'm going to say like 40 or 50.
Jeb?
Well, let's just do the math, right? So let's say 3 yards. So 39.
You're both over.
Wow.
And you lose the showcase showdown. The answer is 33. And you would have believed me if I said the answer was 17.
Right.
Yeah.
Like every time Carr would take the snap, and he even had protection. So maybe he's just gun shy, right? Every time he would take the snap and then immediately wing it out to Kamara. And so he had like 13 catches. I think maybe one of them was past the line of scrimmage, and he gained 2.5 yards a catch. Like, it was the most chicken shit. My first real depressing moment would have been when they drove down into field goal range and then on first and 10 ran the wackiest complicated handoff from Taysom to Derek Carr, who then obviously handed it to Kamara, who got hit for like a 5 or 6 yard loss. And I was like, that's what we're gonna do after marching down the field some complicated bullshit and get Kamara lit up in the backfield. And then after that, it just was all super depressing.
Yeah, it was downhill.
Like, he had two kinds of passes all game. Derek Carr had two kinds of passes, either super conservative. That's wrong. He had three. He had super conservative passes. He had missed opportunities where he missed his target. And there was waiting until the pocket collapsed and then getting swarmed under. I was losing my mind watching him play. I was like, I can't believe this is the guy who we spent all week hoping would play.
Yeah.
And yet.
And then James.
Yeah. And yet Jameis came in.
Yeah.
And when he threw one ball and it was a pick, right? I mean,
right. It's the Jameis Winston perfect game.
Yeah. He did it on acid.
One for one.
I gotta say, he is one of our 2-1 play all-stars, because Jameis came in for one play and threw a pick, Adam Prentice got one carry. Good news, he gained 5 yards.
Yeah, we don't want to see that again. Yeah.
The Bucks recovered the ball at the 6. So, I couldn't. There was just so much going on in this game that just really defied description. I thought they used Taysom horribly. He gained 10 yards on 4 carries because they kept giving him the ball in like really obvious situations. Yeah. And I don't know. I was very frustrated watching this game from beginning to end. And like after I saw like the 4th time that Derek Carr did not let the ball go when he had time and got swarmed, I just like literally threw my hat down on the ground like I was in a like 1950s rom-com, you know, and my secretary had just disappeared with my protege, and and he was, I think, legitimately embarrassed by me in an active rather than the typical passive way.
No, I get it. I mean, even as I was watching it, I was like, this has just got to be a massively frustrating game because there was like one gimme pick of Baker that I can't remember who didn't come up with it. There was another one that was...
It was Jordan Howard.
So I felt like there were just two, you know, like one absolute gimme pick and then one that was really close, probably should have been. And then I'm not sure if like nobody was getting separation because like Derek Carr loves to just sexy Rexy it up like 5 times a game, and he missed one like clear as a bell. But like otherwise he didn't, you know, it didn't seem like there was really anything he could, you know, just drop back and Derek Carr it to.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
What is your take on the end zone play where he...
Well,
where
I'm in favor of their getting there.
Well, you, sir, are a strategist. No, I mean the deep ball to Olave that was it Winfield who knocked it away? Am I remembering his am I forgetting his name?
I believe that's his name. I don't know.
So Winfield knocked the ball away. What is your take? Do you consider that a good pass, a bad pass, a so-so pass? I will let you answer it and then I will give the answer, which is probably obvious from my tone.
I didn't think it was egregious, but it, like, I remember the announcers calling it as like, you know, what a great defensive play. And it was kind of like, well, you know, like, you know, how much is being protected here? I guess, I don't know. Go on.
Ron.
Yeah. He should have probably let it go earlier when he had. I think Olave had more steps on him before that, and it gave Winfield a little bit. Yeah,
you see, that was my take. I thought that he needed to get that ball out sooner. By the time he got it out, he had to watch for the back of the end zone, and so Olave ended up slowing down to adjust to the ball, and that's how Winfield caught it. Winfield did make a great play, but the play was instead of Carr throwing Olave in stride, he made Olave come back to the ball. And in a game of, you know, where you get a step and a half on the cornerback and your secretariat, if you allow the cornerback to close that because you have to adjust to the ball, it's on the quarterback. And so, whatever, it's not the worst pass in the world, but he made an easy play hard, and then it didn't work.
Yeah, that I'm starting to see a theme of that with Derek Carr, too. You know,
yeah,
the few times he goes downfield, you know, and he, I don't know if he's the guy. I don't know if he's going to be the guy. I don't necessarily want to see Jameis, but I don't know what you do. He's going to have to be the guy this year. But I don't know what happens.
Right.
This is what I was thinking coming into this, if I may, which was that like the way I wanted to pour oil on the troubled waters was that like this very much felt like you could switch the, you know, if I didn't know from the shape of somebody or the way they play or the way they, you know, tuck their uniform, you know, if you just made the team switch, you would be like, well, I don't know which is which. They're both kind of bad. Like, yeah. And they're kind of bad in the same way, which is that, you know, they have their defenses are making plays, and you can see that there are a few offensive playmakers, but they're just throwing these like quick outs and slants and the like little bunch receiver formations that are still like, well, let's turn up the field for 4 yards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And not letting or able to have things develop downfield, except for like a couple moments that might be. And Mike Evans makes a catch and Olave doesn't. Right. And like, you're just in, you're in Bucks world right now. Right. Your quarterback is like, well, you know, he seems like a nice person.
Yeah. I think Baker Mayfield does a good commercial.
He does.
Yeah.
You know, like those bits where the premise was that he actually lived at whatever the Browns, I don't know, what is it like? The court receiver stadium.
The Flying J truck stop. Stadium. Yes.
The indictment pending. those were fun.
Yeah.
Those were fun. Like, he's a guy who I don't despise at a personal visceral level. And yet, every time he got rid of the ball, I wanted to commit a crime. Because, like, I will say, it was the Saints pass rush is supposed to be a strength. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It really genuinely is. We've got Cam, and we've got Granderson, and we've got a bunch of guys who can, like, you know, Brzee is our first-round pick, and he is, like, you know, he's got the juice, and we're supposed to be able to rush the passer. And I don't think that the Bucks have, you know, a spectacularly respected offensive line by any means.
No.
And no pressure. Mayfield always had enough time. Like, even the sacks felt like coverage sacks when they happened, because our coverage was, you know, mostly good, but we weren't getting any pressure on him.
And sometimes when we did, he ran out the pocket and made a nice little gain. You know, he did it with his feet.
Yeah.
I didn't know he could do that.
That was the especially frustrating thing. We couldn't contain at all once coverage held up. We didn't have, it's not like I really expect anyone to spy on him or anything, but there just was no one who was able to
That's so
him.
Sad to say we couldn't contain Baker Mayfield. Like, that's
I mean, rushing contain. I mean, I literally mean, like, the coverage was always away from the line. And so every time the pass rush got pushed out to the side, when he leaked out, he would get first down. Like, I think on their second touchdown drive, they must have converted like a half dozen first down.
That was the 9-minute one, right? That had the gadget play and the...
Yeah. It was just ugly. We would get them into third and, you know, medium to long, and then never stop them. Like, it's a lot of third and sevens, third and eights that we just gave up a, you know, medium catch, or Baker Mayfield just scrambled out of trouble. And I was like, this can't keep happening to me. Yeah. I am a basically good person.
And it did keep happening.
It did keep happening. And I have been told I'm not actually that good a person.
And in spite of that, I feel like you're beating yourself up a little bit. I mean, not to heap plaudits upon Baker Mayfield, but he's not bad at making plays rolling out to his right. Like, you know, he makes stuff happen. I think it's partly because, like, as soon as it looks like the play breaks down or somebody has to hesitate back to him, it creates like a little more obvious opportunity for him. I'm not sure, still not sure he reads things very well, and that tends to improve stuff for him. But like, you know, that wound up, you know, he kept doing stuff that he does pretty decently, and it's not the worst thing to get to give up a few in that manner to him. I mean, he's not Jameis Winston,
right? Which is really, I mean, I remember Jameis Winston at Florida State, and I feel like he could get out of the pocket and run, right? He had his own issues, but he does not run at all in the NFL. He just stands there until he is sacked and fumbles it, or he releases it into triple coverage and gets picked, which I guess when he had Mike Evans running under the ball all the time somehow worked out for like 3,500 yard seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
despite all the interceptions, but it's no way to live to have to watch that yeah. all the time.
He's making parody exciting, right? You know,
that's perfect way of putting it.
First of all, he wanted to be football's first 30-30 man at quarterback, right?
Mission accomplished. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he could do 40-40 if somebody gave him a chance.
I think he could do Acuna and be 30-70. Yeah.
I had high hopes when he got the LASIK surgery. I was like, well, this is a new Jameis, you know.
It made him be like, oh, that is definitely a cornerback soon.
And now our segment, Man in the Dome, is Chris joining us. He was in the stadium that day, the terrible day that we lost to Tampa. So, Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Where do you sit?
I sit in the end zone.
So like one, what is it, 111, 110 or something?
104.
104. You're just downstairs from where we used to be.
Yeah.
But Chris, I want to know you. I think I heard this from Ron. You're a lifetime New Orleans
lifetime
guy.
Lifetime New Orleans guy, born and raised here.
How many generations?
I would say I'm the first generation. Was born in Mississippi. I grew up hearing the Saints not good enough. You know, I fought against that. Like, he was like, oh, what you expect? I'm like, wait a minute. You're from Mississippi. I'm from New Orleans. Let me have my thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Grew up hearing about, like, the snake, Ken Stabler versus the Saints in 19 whatever. Grew up hearing about Joe Montana. I'm like, look, I don't hear about Joe Montana. Yeah. I don't hear about Ken Stabler. I don't hear about, like, the bags on their heads. So when I started actually going to the games, I started going to the games during the Aaron Brooks era, you know?
Yeah. So that was our first, that was the first time we ever went.
That was my first game. And so my first time going. And then I was here through the Drew Brees era. You know, I'm like, oh, Drew Brees era. You know, okay, check me out now. I went to two NFC championships. Two different NFC championships 10 years apart. One we won and one we were cheated from. So I feel like we won two of them.
Yeah. That was the last game I ever went to in person was when we was there for the NFC championship with the Rams.
And we can be as nonspecific as you want about this, but how do you and Ron know each
other? Oh, we used to work together. And that's how we met. We're both from this area, this Southeast Louisiana area. And we, you know, formed a friendship about, you know, with other things, you know, but like, I think we had a mutual respect and love for football. And of course, growing up in this area, Ron may have heard some of the same things I've heard from, they're just the bums, you know, but.
Yeah. Yeah. People still root against them.
We've had people root against them because I think. When we grew up, it was easier to root against them because your heart was involved in it. And that's the kind of how I felt.
It was a defense mechanism. Right. Yeah, but it was a defense mechanism because everybody was scared to like the Saints because you would get beat down every weekend.
Yes.
Now imagine what kind of twisted idiot mind it takes to live in Brooklyn and be like that.
What was it like being in there? In that awful game, man.
The first quarter, entering into the dome, a lot of energy. The crowd was into it. The crowd was loud.
Yeah. Did people get excited when Derek Carr came out?
Very excited for Derek Carr. Very excited for the team. Very excited for the offense.
Return of Kamara.
The introduction was great. You know, the first drive ended in a field goal. After that, I think it was a 3-0 lead at the end of the first quarter, it was flat after that.
Yeah,
I can imagine.
Damn.
The first quarter had a fast start. I think what was kind of saw the turning point in the first quarter. Maybe was when I think Derek Carr escaped some pressure. He threw like a lollipop pass to the fullback, number 46.
Yeah, to Prentice.
And Prentice just kind of dropped it. Well, not kind of dropped it. He absolutely dropped it.
Yeah.
He had open field.
It was a little high, right? But it went through his hands.
It was a little high, but it hit both of his hands. That was like no type moment. It was like we all stood up at that moment, and then we all like, oh, he just didn't catch that. And we saw, we saw the green in front of him. We saw nothing but green in front of him. That was like a big letdown, like for the fans, for the crowd, because we all like, we stood up. They were all like, oh no.
Yeah.
At least that was the worst thing Adam Prentice did.
I don't know.
maybe, but I felt like we had momentum. That kind of like how the day went. We didn't know it at the time, but the day kind of went like, okay, this opportunity, then this opportunity. But that was the first big opportunity I think we had during the game.
Yeah, I mean, we had the one drive where we stalled out with a dumb play.
And it kind of felt like at that point, I was still like, well, it's the beginning of the game. They kind of messed this one up, but it looks like we can move the ball. So we ought to be scoring some touchdowns this game. You know, we at home, we play in Tampa. It just kind of, I had that idea that it would go that way, and it certainly didn't. Chris, what was it like by like the third, fourth quarter? Did everybody leave early? Is this one of them games where they just ducked out or?
Going into the third and fourth quarter, it was just like, it was very flat. And then we kind of started to see like the offense was, I think, very choppy. You know, the offensive line is maybe not as bad as we thought we were, but then it was just like the play calling was not as good as what we had seen in the past years. I don't know if we made adjustments at the half.
Well, they definitely didn't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I wasn't there, but I could tell you they didn't do that.
Is people panicking?
I don't think there was a panic. I think there was just like, okay, it's going to turn around.
Well, what about at the end of the game? What was the exit from the stadium like? Was that like a funeral or are people like really worried about the rest of the season?
I think we were worried about the rest of the season, but I think that there was just like a shock. Because like we felt like this is a game we could have had. That's the energy I felt going out. It was like they didn't beat us, but we kind of beat ourselves. And well, we feel like we have the players. We got Michael Thomas. Chris Olave, the receiver number 22. Alvin Kamara's back. Rasheed.
Yeah.
We feel like we have the players.
Yeah.
There was some audible calls of like, what is Derek Carr doing? That's kind of how we felt. There were a few passes in the second half where it's like guys were open. He didn't see those guys. He held the ball too long. Or they were, I'm just going to address the worst case scenario. They're 0-2. I think that next game is going to be hell for the Jaguars.
Okay.
I mean, I think we're going to want that win so bad.
So bad.
That the fans are going to, a Thursday night, going into the weekend, the fans are going to come in so hard, they're like, I think we're going to run them out the dome. We're definitely going to win. I can't see about the next two games. We're definitely going to win.
We're going to clip that.
If we're 0-2.
That is the spirit.
I just know the Saints fans. If we're 0-2 going into that Jaguars game, the Jaguars are going to have to leave town on a bus anonymously.
is the spirit I want to end this segment on.
Cool.
That is absolutely the spirit I want to end this. All right. Chris, thank you so much for joining us on Man in the Dome. Man in the Dome.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for coming on.
So we laughed before about Kamara's 13 catches for 33 yards. I want to point out that Derek Carr, and we're going to play this game again, Derek Carr had 23 completions. How many yards? Ron, you go first.
Fuck, with that many, you got to have at least 160. But it don't. Who would that have went? Yeah, I'm going to just say 160.
180.
What the fuck?
We
127.
Wow. Wow.
What is that for a tip?
It is literally inconceivable that it is like a little over 5 yards per completion, and at 37 attempts, it is under 4 yards an attempt.
Jeez.
Yeah.
God damn.
It's really bad. Really bad. And it was just because he kept turning around and throwing passes behind the line. The only person who he tried, I guess Thomas and Shahid, he tried to sort of hit a little bit downfield. You know, he got 6 targets to Thomas, who caught 4 of them. Some of those catches were, like, incredible. You know, he still has his first baseman's mitt hands with an iron grip. And Rashid Shahid, he threw to 7 times. He caught 3. Olave, he threw to 6 times. I don't know how many of them were catchable. He had 1 catch for 4 yards.
Oh, man.
And he's open all the time, which is why it was driving me crazy how long he would hold the ball.
Yeah, he's just not seeing the field.
And I think he's scared. You know, like, I think he's at this point worried that his pocket is going to implode on him, because it did so often the first few weeks, to the point that he got thrown to the ground like a rag doll and missed half the game against Green Bay.
Yeah.
They had 3 sacks. Does it list quarterback hits? 4 tackles for loss.
So we only gave up 3 sacks. That's good for us this year.
Yeah.
That seems like a low number for the Saints.
We only got 1, though.
Vita Vea has a pectoral injury. That's part of it.
Yeah. And he had 2 sacks, and he's the one who recovered the ball from Prentice at the 6-yard line.
That's like...
So the guy with the pec injury still beat the hell out of us. 2 sacks, a tackle for a loss.
Yeah. I'm saying he should normally have 4 more. I'm just saying.
Sure.
Yeah. He'll get that next time we play him.
Oh, and they also had 5 hits on the quarterback. And so Vea sacked him twice and hit him 2 more for good measure.
It's funny. I don't know how I watched so many parts of the game twice and yet thought it was better than it was. And I think it's because I'm so used to the Derek Carr experience being like, well, shitty, okay, okay. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, you sort of zone out because nothing good seems like it's going to happen. And you're like, I should check social media and see if somebody I don't know is saying something I don't respect about, like, something that's not even sincere for me and I don't care about either, you know? And then and you're like, and you look up and they're like, oh, it's another shitty pass. And like, oh, it's another shitty pass, but they're like 16 yards from where they were earlier. Right? It wasn't like, it couldn't have been anything special because you'd have looked up.
Yeah.
But they did move. And like, I felt that the Saints moved enough to presume activity, right? Like to presume some sort of normalcy, and then just a couple breaks for the Bucs and a couple breaks for the Saints. But otherwise it was just, you know, 2 clashing defenses and otherwise like very familiar mediocrity.
Yeah.
Like frustrating mediocrity. And like, yeah, I mean, yeah, he spooked. Yeah. He waited too long on some stuff, but like, they're just not that good.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yep. And then, Dennis Allen comes out. I think it was today. They asked him, like, are you going to change anything? Are you going to make any adjustments? And he says, no. He's going to do exactly what he did, you know, next week. So I don't know if Dennis Allen has anything, any ideas, any fresh, like, things he can throw at this. Or I think this is just the Derek Carr we're going to see all year. You know, the offense we're going to see all year, unfortunately.
He's not even a notable Dennis. Like, this guy is never going to be the coach, right? Like, I keep wanting to call him Dennis Erickson, right? Like, he's not Denny Green, right? Like, Denny Green.
No.
That's a man, right?
That's like, a Dennis. That's a top-tier Dennis.
Yeah, he escaped Dennis. He was just like, I dropped that suffix. I'm replacing it. Like, these guys just, you know, Or this guy, he's just one person, but in a way, he's an entire army of indistinct white guys who don't have an answer.
So now here's the question. Since you're only kind of an Osmosis fan, do you want to participate in the segment, Get Our Ass, which is what we invite the guest to do if the Saints have lost, where you get as little as 30 seconds and as much as 2 minutes to just unload on us and get our ass in celebration of your win?
No, I mean, that's just cruel. Like,
we deserve it. We deserve it.
I will simply wear a hair shirt to bed tonight.
See, I don't feel comfortable with the dunk because I feel like I'm watching, again, you know, two very similar teams in that I don't know how relatively good or bad they are. Like, the performance of the Saints offense could have been just that the Bucks were getting enough pressure, not only to spook Carr, you know, in his fragile state, but just in general to be disruptive in maintaining downfield coverage. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't do well against the Eagles, but it's the Eagles, right? Like, I don't think that the Bucks defense, it was as bad as the Eagles game would suggest. I don't think that they are necessarily as good as this game would suggest. But I don't know. And I kind of feel that the Saints are very much in the same position. Like, maybe, you know, maybe Derek Carr shakes the ghosts out of his head. And in two games, he's like doing his thing where, you know, they still lose, but he throws for like 380 yards.
I mean, I'm hoping. I know that next week we get New England and their stud rookie cornerback is apparently already declared out. Christian Hernandez, I think his name is, who was just really blowing up, like just had an incredible first couple of games for New England, and now we don't have to face him.
Didn't Judon get injured as well?
And Judon got hurt too. I think so he's got, out also. So I mean, I'm optimistic for the next week, but I will be very upset if that doesn't pan out.
Yeah, because Green Bay was missing a bunch of starters, and they still put it to us. I just can't
bang. Exactly. Yeah. The game book has a thing. They list the 10 longest plays for each team. And by play number 2, the Saints are at 13 yards. Their longest play was 20. And Tampa has 3 plays longer than that. And then 2 at 18. And, like, the Saints are out of double digits before that list runs out. Like, they are at 10 at play 7, and they are at 8 yards at play 10. And I'm like, they ran 50 plays or 60 plays on offense or something.
Yeah,
they had 65 plays on offense, and literally 8 of them gained double-digit yardage. That's completely insane.
There's no excuse for that. Like, with the offense that we got, you know, with the personnel we have, there's really no excuse. There's got to be coaching, you know, and
Carr, play calling. Course, like, I think, I don't know what they're doing that the only kinds of passes are screens and sidelines. They, you know, like, Michael Thomas used to really eat on slants and crossing routes, and I don't feel like he's catching the ball in motion ever anymore. And I'm starting to think that it has nothing to do with him or with the quarterback, but with the what they're writing up for him.
That's called the Dennis factor.
No, he doesn't even call the plays. He doesn't even call the plays. Pete Carmichael calls the plays. And people asked him if Pete Carmichael was going to keep calling plays. And that was one of the things where he like really ducked the question.
I mean, that's the Dennis factor. Yeah, right. It's like the Futurama episode where the neutral planet is about to be annihilated. And he's like, if we don't make it out of this, tell my wife hello.
So right? I think about that all the time.
It's, you know, you're going to get, he sets a beige standard and that beige accountability that devolves to all levels in the organization. Yeah. Right. So, you know, the OC, he knows to keep it beige. Like, there's going to be a little pepper in this, not too much.
What were your impressions on Red Zone of the rest of the league, Jeff?
uh, I'm sorry. It's sort of like a half laugh, half cough right now. I don't know. It's like, you know, you enter this sort of fugue state and you come out 7 hours later and you're like, I have processed all football. And yet it's like a campground. I take nothing with me. I leave nothing behind. Right. Like,
that's a good way of thinking about it. I think red zone is football in the sphere.
I had a good time. I did some housework. I've like fucked around on my computer. I responded to my correspondence and every time I looked up,
dearest
something was happening.
Eleanor. The view from the front is punting again. How about you, Ron? Were you at home with Marshall?
Yeah, I was working on I set up an outside TV and I had like a premonition the night before. It was like a dream that just said hammock zone. So I was like going to build this thing in my yard where all these hammocks could have like people come over and hang out hammocks, you know?
Oh, the hammock district.
So I was like, yeah, the hammock district. Like I got like 3 acres back here and like, I was like, I should have a place for all these hammocks. Like I should probably have a hammock area. So I was still like setting concrete and cutting wood and like, you know, measuring like rope and all that. So I was like, it was a good to keep my mind off of it from, you know, really, because it was kind of frustrating because like I would take a measurement and the Saints would do something so baffling and I would like have to cut a piece of wood the next commercial, but I would get so angry I'd forget and have to go measure it again and then remember it. It would take me, it was just not a good, I probably won't try it.
Marshall
like that
barking at you the whole time, you're making sticks when the you should be throwing sticks. Yes. Marshall is a mini pincher and the official tea retrieval dog of City Saint and Country Saint podcast.
Very nice.
Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah, like I'll like whenever like we'll throw the ball together while I'm watching the game, and he's good 50 yards. Like he's good. You know, he can get it.
Well, so if he can get behind the defense, I have someone you need to talk to.
I know. There's nothing in the rule book,
right?
That says. But yeah, my impression watching this, like the first like 2.5 games of the season, I was like, we're probably going to be winning a lot of games, you know, like 17-9. And right now I'm like, we're probably going to be losing a lot of games 9-17. That's kind of how it feels like, this kind of flipped on us. And I think we got like 4 touchdowns all year or something like that.
That sounds right. I mean, we had none in this game.
That sounds right.
The
3 or 4 Breeze would get us that in a quarter sometimes. And this is just different. This is just different football, man. I don't know. Yeah, I was pretty bummed watching this, you know. I didn't cut my fingers off, but I could have.
Not gonna lie, I thought about it several times.
I did. I was like, this would change my focus of the day if I just put this, you know, this circular saw in my knuckles, you know?
Right. Yeah. They say you don't feel lesser pain anymore when you have superseding pain. So
yeah,
right. He's gonna look down and realize that he did actually cut a finger off.
Sweet release.
Oh man, you think they would give me like season tickets for something like that? But the world don't work that way.
Well, if they give one to you, they have to give one to everybody.
Yes. There'd just be a bunch of like 8-fingered people at the games.
More.
Everybody looks like they're drawing like a cartoon character, you know, missing a...
All vaguely jaundiced.
Changing the mascot to the leper with the most fingers.
The Saints should have like some kind of giveaway, some kind of promotion. You're missing a couple fingers, we're giving you tickets. I don't know why they should. Gail Benson would never do that. That's the thing about our owners. Like the owning class has no vision. They have nothing interesting to do or anything like that, you know? But that would be a cool promotion. Like if we lived in a just world, they should do shit
instead,
like that.
Instead, they just prop up the diocese of.
Yes.
Giving advice to the cardinal on how to timely declare bankruptcy.
Oh, yeah. They have so many sexual harassment. The priests are like going nuts in New Orleans with the little kids, you know? And like, and they fund half of that stuff. Like, if you go to like a religious school up in New Orleans, like a private school, like your tuition is funding like them to pay out lawsuits, you know?
Yeah.
So was Gail Benson. Yeah.
The Saints are just trying to give a little bit of money, just a little bit of help to a down on its luck organization like the Roman Catholic Church. Right? Just every little bit helps.
They need it.
You know.
Oh, they need it.
But I mean, I feel like this is another one of these complaints where it's like, I know exactly where you're at. You know, you've got this ownership that is basically cashing checks every year. You know, they're not doing anything fun with it. Like the Glazers, they're cashing checks every year because they want to go fund, like they want to go have fun in a better and different sports league. They have better things to do than to care about this team. They went and they got Tom Brady. And like that'll keep, you know, like that'll hold the little SOBs for like a decade. They're not going to try again. Like in 2030, they'll be like, well, shit, you know, people are starting to notice again.
Right. Well, by then, Tom Brady will be 27.
Yeah. Right. Well, he's been sleeping in enough stem cells. So
they're going to bring him back for his renaissance.
Just every night he refuses to eat nightshades and he sleeps in a cocoon of royal jelly.
You just have to feed him from a dropper. Huh. It's fine.
Sugar water.
Yeah, little baby bird.
I'm trying to think if there's anything I watched that didn't get me mad. Oh, you know what I should have asked Chris? Chris was our man in the dome. If people booed Groupie when he came out. I'm curious.
Yeah. And, you know,
he did, but that's not. But he also missed the game-winning kick last week. So I wanted to know if they gave the rookie shit when he came out for the beginning of the game. Anyone have any other thoughts about the game or football? Jeb, are you going to follow the league much this year, or are you mostly focused on other things?
Well, the single dad thing, like, just really bites into my, like, I'm going to spend 6 hours on a Sunday watching, you know, and also, like, I'm getting increasingly, like, incapable of justifying it. We packed, you know, like, every Saturday preceding, you know, NFL Sunday with stuff for the kids. So, like, I could have my day of rest. Uh-huh. But even then, I'm just sort of like, I look around, and it's like, well, shit, you know, literally nobody else is going to do it. Because I'll just catch something in the corner of my eye. And it's like, or, like, I'll just go get a snack and remember that the kitchen floor is fucking filthy. Yeah. And pretty soon I'm mopping. And then, like, well, I got to go out to the shed to grab a thing. And then, oh, shit, I got to do that. And then, like, 3 hours later, I pop in and like Russell Wilson's on the TV and it's like, back outside.
I don't deserve that. That's fair. And where are you writing now? You had a new landing spot for something recently.
Oh, there's a kind of suite of websites. There's Truth Out and Truth Dig, and they do commentary and investigative work. There are a lot of people who are like vets of Alternet. Basically just like really good editorial staff, and the ownership group just seems to want to pay for good journalism. So they paid me, and I was like, hey, they offered money for this. Well, shit, I'll try that.
And so is that a recurring thing, or was that a freelance thing?
I'll do some other stuff for them in the future. You know, for now, I'm just endorsing it as a suite of websites that you should check out. But not for me. I don't have a
fair
regular.
Fair enough. Ron, do you have any closing thoughts?
I think I got everything. I mean, I was excited for this game. I remember like the first podcast we did. When we talked about Tampa, I didn't even know who the quarterback was, and you said Baker Mayfield, and I cackled like I was excited for this. And now I'm not. Now I don't want to play him again. So I'm just sad. That's right.
Well. You know, I will give you just, okay, two rays of light here to walk away from. Oh, three. The second part of my plug is check out my podcast. It's Christmas Town. Charles comes on it. It's about Hallmark movies. Thanks.
All right.
But no, the ray of light is like, you know, I haven't gotten used to this. I think a lot of people haven't gotten used to this, that there isn't as much preseason as there used to be. And we were all kind of okay with the first three games of, you know, seasons past, seasons of yore being like janky and weird, where you'd get like, you know, like the one that always comes to mind to me is like, I think it was the second season where the Brady Patriots won the Super Bowl, like the second game or the third game of that year, they got fucking annihilated by Buffalo. It was like 31 to 3, you know, and you're like, Drew Bledsoe had his revenge, and like it, you know, it, obviously it didn't matter, right? And we kind of understood that timeline, and I think we haven't adjusted to the fact that we kind of maybe need to just write off like the first five games now.
I guess. Yeah. I think
that's true. That could be, yeah.
I think I need to adjust to the fact that people talk to me about the Saints like I just called a suicide hotline. And they could tell from my tone that I need to hear something comforting. Yeah. And so I will just treat that like a positive instead of the much more intuitive negative that it probably is, because I'm willing to lie to myself. I do it all the time.
Well, here's the other one, the third ray of light here for you. And although I don't want to take away from the mellifluous funereal tone that you have, the Saints always own the Bucks, especially when they shouldn't. You know, I remember so many seasons where the Bucks seemed loaded compared to what the Saints have, you know, like the on offense, you guys were down to like Drew Brees and like a friend of his. And, you know, the defense had that sort of like, well, it's, you know, there's no reason to be conflictual, like, and sort of watching people blow by them, right? Like, and and then they would just like annihilate the Bucks in this humiliating way. It was all, you know, like, always some sort of, you know, like the Bucks would find a way to punt backwards, right? And if Baker and the Bucks start to put it together, I would think you could almost rest on that inevitably happening. Like if the Saints stay this shambolic, they will still feast at the Bucks' expense, because that is the order of things. Like, I think this is like a truly aberrant victory for the Bucks. Like in terms of like the overall series, like how things have been trending, it's not sustainable. It's going to snap back, right? The Bucks fortune's elasticity economy, or the Bucks fortune economy, is not that elastic.
I will drink that Kool-Aid.
I like that. Yes, I can get down with that.
All right.
So thank you to Jeb for coming on the show. Thank you to my partner, as always, L. Ron Mexico. I'm Charles Starr, and this has been City Saint and Country Saint.
Shit.